My guests on the show today are Chris Marie Campbell and Susan Clark. They are fellow podcasters, best-selling authors, relationship and business coaches, partners in life and in business, and co-founders of Thrive Inc. I'm so excited to have them on the podcast today talking about The Beauty of Conflict, which is the name of their podcast and their books, The Beauty of Conflict and The Beauty of Conflict for Couples. I absolutely loved our interview, and it's a little bit longer than our normal episodes, but this one gets so good at the end. I'm telling you, hang on until the end, where we talk about some of the most relevant practical applications of how to navigate conflict in this crazy time we're experiencing. So without further ado, here is my interview with Chris Marie and Susan of Thrive Inc. And welcome to On the Brighter Side. I'm your host, Monica Tanner, and I'm really excited about our guests today. There are actually two of them. They are the co-founders of Thrive Inc., Chris Marie Campbell, an Olympic rower, and Susan Clark, a former marriage therapist. So you know that I'm excited about that. They are the authors of The Beauty of Conflict, Harnessing Your Team's Competitive Advantage, and The Beauty of Conflict for Couples. They also have a podcast with the same name, The Beauty of Conflict, for dealing with conflict at work and at home. As partners in work and life for over two decades, they've adapted their proven step-by-step process, honed working with Fortune 100 companies such as Johnson & Johnson, Microsoft, AT&T, and San Francisco Giants to help long-term couples use conflict as a catalyst to greater intimacy, passion, and fulfillment. Their work and expertise has been featured on notable outlets such as The Today Show, NBC, and Shape. Hello, ladies. How are you doing?
Good. So glad to be here, Monica. This is Chris Marie.
And this is Susan.
Awesome. So good to finally meet you guys in person. Well, yes. Over the computer in person.
It works for us.
Yes. I would love to start by having you both tell us a little bit about yourselves and your family.
Sure. I'll start. This is Chris Marie. I grew up with a dad who's an Army colonel, and we still call him the colonel. He's 90. And every night at dinner was like running the gauntlet, hoping he wouldn't get upset. So I really did not grow up liking conflict or being very good at it. In fact, I'm a professional conflict avoider. I grew up being that. And because I used to do anything I could, my sister liked to press his buttons. And so I would try to fuse a situation, ask a question, distract him, anything in order to make sure he did not explode. And so that turned me into a pleaser and an achiever. And I mean, that stood me very well. It actually got me to the Olympics, you know, being a good team member. And I was a Boeing engineer and then went on to got my MBA and worked at Arthur Andersen. And I didn't really change my tune about conflict until it became career limiting when I got blamed for a project because I didn't speak up in time to say, wait a minute. And I thought, I got to figure out how to do this differently. And then I met Susan, who dealt with conflict in a whole new way. And I was like, I want to know what she does. And we started our relationship. We fell in love and then we started working together.
Awesome.
And this is Susan. I mean, I'll tell you, like, yes, we've been both work and life partners 20 plus years. We don't have kids, but we do have two dogs. I'll just give you a little foothold of our family here. And my experience growing up was really, I think I got into my 20s and I got very ill and actually was diagnosed with an advanced cancer process. And up until that point, I think I, you know, just sort of did what I did. But when that happened, everything got called into question. I mean, there were things in the course of dealing with the treatments where information about who I was and who I thought I was suddenly called into question because of medical issues. I was dealing with an advanced cancer process. And at one point, the medical team said, you know, we don't have anything else to offer and you're not responding and you probably have 6 months to live. So I had like all these kind of crisis things arriving at the same time. And for me, it really forced me to have to bring my voice forward and start to, one, deal with naturopaths and alternative medicine and medical people and nutritionists who didn't particularly like each other and get them to talk to each other. I also was unearthing a lot of things from my own history that I had never dealt with, just were getting stirred up. And that was creating a tremendous amount of conflict within my family and community. So conflict was everywhere. And it was at that point that I started to realize I need to speak up. I could die quietly, or I could deal with all of these different things. And so 7 years later in Cleanville Health, I was very passionate about fun. We call our book The Beauty of Conflict, not the joy or the ease or the grace of conflict, but the beauty, because that's that depth. That's what it felt like to me at that time in my life, going through it, both inside and out of me. And I believe that even now, working with teams, working with couples, and especially even today in the current environment we're in with so much happening, that we really need to look at conflict differently, I think.
So. Yeah, it's so interesting. And I was going to point that out about the title of your book. I think you chose such an incredible word with the beauty of conflict, because it really can have a beautiful outcome. And I've been reading a ton of Gottman right now, mm-hmm. and he talks about the two different kinds of conflict in a marriage that can be overcome, and then that is just perpetual. And all of us have, whether we're in a happy relationship or a struggling relationship, everybody has that perpetual conflict that you just have to learn to deal with. So mm-hmm. talk about your book, The Beauty of Conflict for Couples, and how that kind of came to be.
When I started in relationship with Susan, when we'd get into a fight, I was like, oh my gosh, it's over. I'm out of here. Because my belief was, hey, my job is to keep everything smooth. And a good relationship is one where everything is smooth. And so when we'd get into a conflict about something and she'd be raising her voice, and of course I'd be catapulted back to my dad's dinner table and think, and she'd be like, no, I really want to hear your opinion. And I'd settle myself down and find my voice to speak up. And lo and behold, if I hung in there, we would come up with a really creative solution that wasn't my way. You know, it felt like mutually exclusive, like it's going to be her winning or me winning. And if we could just hold that and be curious and interested and say what's really going on, be vulnerable, we would percolate new ideas. And I thought, wow. And then we saw it when we were working with organizations and teams. If we helped them actually create the relationships and trust each other, the business stuff happened really quickly, and they came up with very innovative and profitable solutions. So I thought, this is uncomfortable, but there's something really to this. And that's how we got to the beauty, because we think differences, there's a source of potential energy there that too often we tend to diffuse because we're too uncomfortable with that internal tension and that tension between me and you. And so what do I need to do to get out of this? And we have typical styles that we use to get out of that conflict.
You know, I was also thinking, you know, having worked with lots of different couples, so for being a marriage and family therapist and the work we've done with all sorts of couples, the couples that were in the most trouble to me were not the ones that were fighting. One, the ones that had no fight, those were that was problematic. Or if there was indifference, the opposite of love isn't hate, it's indifference. You know, and that's really where everything has gone out of the relationship. And that's when it's tragically less likely. So if you have conflict, then you've got some juice. And if you're afraid of conflict, what happens then, you usually become resentful, which is, you think it's about the other person, but it's really about you not showing up as fully as you need to. So I think that's why conflict is such a rich thing, for you are showing up fully and so is your partner. And if you could see it like that, not as a problem, but as how you're each unique, separate individuals, that's something good, you know, even though it's
uncomfortable.
You know, uncomfortable. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting the way you describe that. When you were talking, Chris Marie, I was thinking about, like, the word that kept coming into my head was synergy. Like, we didn't marry a clone,
right?
You know, we're going to have differences of opinion. And it's like, if you can show up and, you know, support that difference of opinion and be able to tolerate somebody else's ideas, then this beautiful synergy can happen. So I think it's very common to think, if we fight all the time, then we're probably not meant to be together. together. But in your book, you say that conflict in a relationship can still be a positive sign. And in fact, no conflict can be a red flag, which is what you were just addressing. But talk a little bit more about, like, we should be worried if there's absolutely no conflict.
Yeah, because if there's no conflict, we think no conflict, no boundaries, no self-definition. And when we say boundaries, we mean each person self-defining. We do this relationship math in our Beauty of Conflict for Couples, and it's one whole person times one whole person equals a whole relationship. Now, if one person, if I decide, well, I better not speak up, or I shouldn't say that, so I don't bring myself forward, let's say I show up halfway, well, one half times a whole person still equals a half of a relationship. Now, if Susan then decides, well, I better not show up and I'll pick my battles or whatever, then that's a half a person times a half a person equals a quarter of a relationship. So it's diminishing returns. So when you're willing to say, no, this is me, and we talk about this concept intimacy, but we call it into me. See, meaning am I willing to show up and say, hey, this is who I truly am. And I get we bump or it doesn't fit for you, but it's still who I am. I feel alive in that. And when I can find my voice, there's richness in it. And I'm not just depending on Susan to tell me I'm okay. I know I'm okay. So there's a self-sovereignty in that. Mm-hmm. That I bring to the relationship.
I was just thinking the other piece of that is that, you know, I do think most people believe that so many people I've talked to, and women probably more so than men, I would say, talk about feeling resentful. I always think for me, that is like the ultimate little sign of not there's something wrong with the other person, but I'm not showing up. And that it, oftentimes people are like, wow, that's different. I didn't think of it like that. But 9 times out of 10, that's what I found when it comes to resentment.
And we talk about that in the Beauty of Conflict for Couples. We have a whole chapter on boundaries, and boundaries are about me. You know, you need to set boundary when you're feeling resentful. Yeah. That's a first red flag. And rather than it's about you can't do this or you can't interrupt me, it's I want alone time. And I mean, this has come up because Susan and I are trapped in the house together, which we work a lot in our house, but Susan's been able to go skiing for all day or out to the horses, or I go can work out at the gym, and now those have been taken away. And I realize she likes more contact than I do. And so I had to say, I want 2 hours of uninterrupted time. And how I'm going to take care of that is I'm going to go into the bedroom and close the door. My preference is you don't interrupt me unless it's an emergency sort of thing. But that's me taking care of versus, you know, when this first started, I was like, I mean, many years ago, I'd be like, you need to leave the house. You can't do that. It was a lot of you statements versus, wait a minute, this is my need and what I want. And here's how I'm going to take care of it. And then my resentment goes down. But if I'm focused on how she's got to change, you know, it's a no-win situation there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I love that because I teach a lot about intimacy with couples and how to kind of rekindle that intimacy. And most of my journey has to do with realizing my resentment was because I wasn't efficiently asking for what I needed. I wasn't able to process through my emotions and be able to say, look, this is what I need. This is what I want. And so I was just kind of taking on everything and being so resentful.
Yes,
and then there was layers and layers and layers of resentment. And I was like, I love my husband. I just don't really want a whole lot to do with him.
Yeah, exactly. So I just can't stand him right now.
Yeah, I just don't want him to touch me. So that was kind of my journey in recognizing the framework that I now teach that is about recognizing this resentment that comes. And you might really love and respect your spouse. There's no desire. There's no, because there's so many layers of resentment. There.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yes.
That's when I'm coaching women who are working on their relationship and, you know, I married the wrong person. It's really that what you're talking about, Monica. It's like, they seem so wrong to me because I am not really processing how I feel, aware. I may not even be in my body, like how to land in my body, feel my feelings, and then find my voice to ask for what I want.
You know, it's interesting because like with Chris Marie, often she'll talk to me and she'll be like, so what should we have for dinner? You know, and I'm like, oh, I think it'd be great if we had spaghetti or whatever, you know, and I think it's like you asked me what I wanted and I said it. But now I've learned that a question also usually means there's a statement behind it. So if I'm smart, I would say, before I say anything, you know, before I tell you what I want, is there something you already have in your mind? You know, and so I've learned to navigate that. But there is a part of me, like with her, that's like, don't ask me the question and then be mad at me for actually knowing what I want. When I, you know, me, I would have probably been fine if you had just said,
hamburgers.
I'm interested in spaghetti night. What do you think? Or hamburgers tonight. What do you think? Yeah. I would have
And that's true. I did not grow up stating my opinion, and I grew up asking questions. So it's a habit in my brain. Like, I've got to cover up what I want and check if it's safe to have what I want, you know, so I'll ask you your opinion. And shifting that is an ongoing process.
Yeah. So important. You guys talk about, so one thing about conflict, I think the beauty in conflict comes in the resolution, right? If we have ways that we can effectively work through or understand the conflict. You guys teach a 5-5-5 method that helps couples work through conflict that I absolutely love. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, this is one. And for those of you that are like me who avoid conflict, this has been a really game changer for me because it's given me a space to, it's a communication tool. Often in couples, one person wants to really talk about something and they need lots of time. And the other person's like, oh my gosh, are we still talking about that? So this is 15 minutes. And how it's structured is you use a timer. The first 5 minutes, let's say it's money that you're having an issue on. The first 5 minutes, person A, so it would be me, talks for 5 minutes about that topic. Now, I don't have to talk nonstop, but it gives me uninterrupted space to kind of, I can sit there, I can breathe and think and then go, oh, and this, you know, and that. So it gives me, I start to get clarity on even my own thinking in that process. And then Susan's just listening. And then the next 5 minutes, she talks for 5 minutes and I just listen. And it's not like I have to take notes. You could if you wanted, but it's just to give the other person a chance to speak and let it wash over you. And then the third 5 minutes is it's a dialogue. And that's where you can clarify, ask clarifying questions. And at the end of the 15 minutes, it stops. You don't go 5-5-45 because that'll break the boundary. You really go 5-5-5. And if it's a hot topic, you can do this once a day, once a week. And you'd be surprised how it works on you and you get clarity and deeper knowing.
We actually take that back often with couples to try not to resolve it so quickly. I mean, usually there's a form of commitment that you have within a couple that if you can hold that tension longer and really listen to each other, knowing that you're not our real life example of that. Like Krishmarie's a bit of a workaholic and we work together. And we had decided to go on one of our very few ever vacations on a yoga retreat for a week. And I was very excited about it. And we get to our beautiful Palapa and it was a wonderful, we're moving in. And all of a sudden, Krishmarie says to me, I just want you to know, I am really unhappy in our relationship. I don't know if I'm just not sure if we're going to survive. And I was like, what? You know, like you're telling me this right now when we're walking into the one time we have a vacation. And, you know, I had a moment where I was like, well, okay, look, I am willing to have some conversations about that. I want to also
enjoy the retreat.
Try to enjoy the retreat. So I'm going to suggest we try this 5-5-5. Like once a day, we talk about each of us has a chance to talk about why we're unhappy. 5 minutes, you can talk about why you're unhappy. I can listen. And I think she ended up asking for it once in the morning, once in the evening. Mm-hmm. But we agreed to stick to that time frame. And sometimes we each go do our own thing with the yoga retreat. Sometimes, you know, but it ended up being perfect. At the end.
Well, at the end, what I recognize is it was just what we were talking about in the beginning. I had all these resentments of why Susan was the problem. And as I talked about it over the course of this week, I got clear. I was not doing things that I valued. I wasn't engaging in my creativity. So I started going into acting. I decided at the end, I'll pursue acting. I'll do dance and painting. And it totally shifted. It was not about Susan. It was about me not self-expressing. And so yeah, what can look like a problem over there is often a problem inside here, which is what you were saying and I was sharing earlier.
But too often I've seen couples hit a point like that and think, oh my God, we have to go to therapy. We have to do, we're over, we're done. Yeah. And sometimes something as simple as a 555 is actually better than therapy. That, you know, it's a simple way to begin to tolerate talking to each other. And yeah, sure, you might want to go and get a coach or counselor to support you at some point. But that 555 is really going to be the path through, and not just coming to a quick resolution, but realizing, whoa, I can really listen to this person and tolerate us not resolving it and still be in both our love and our tension. Both things can be true.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with all of that. Mm-hmm. In fact, a lot of times when the sparks die out in a relationship, you know, you get the advice like, let's recreate the romance, let's have date night, let's, you know, do all of these things, go to therapy, whatever it may be. But in your book, you recommend something totally against the norm in saying that you should maybe have an argument. So explain that to us.
Well, it may sound, what it means is when the energy is dying out of the relationship, it's often because one of you is not showing up and saying what's really true. And often we don't show up because we think, oh my gosh, I couldn't say this because, you know, then Susan would leave me, or it would so crush her feeling, whatever it is. And so if you can risk actually being honest and saying, we've had people, we do couples coaching, and one person had to tell her partner that she had issues with his breath. And, you know, of course he got defensive, but when they worked through it, he actually had some dental issues and, you know, dental hygiene, whole different thing. But she had to risk saying something that would likely upset the person. So there's the argument. But she felt better. And it also moved them in a whole different direction, because then once that issue was taken care of, one, it was a health issue, and she could actually then kiss him again and create more of the aliveness.
So yeah, it's needed to speak up.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, and so we, you know, we do think though, all couples have some particular hot topics that they don't want to talk about. And that if instead of maybe date night is what's our hot topic night, you know, let's talk about something that we normally would not talk about. And if you know, I'm not opposed to date night,
no,
but I also, think date night should be more pick something different that you want your partner to know. Like one of my best experiences, it really brought this to light, was I was working with a couple and I said to them, oh, you know, I'm going to date night, great, but I want to put a little caveat on it. Like, I want you each to let your partner flip a coin, whoever gets it, gets to pick what you're going to do on this weekend for date day. They had a date day. And you just have to say yes. Like, don't negotiate it. Just let your partner decide and
go with it.
And so they came back like 2 weeks later and they were this like transformed couple. And I was like, well, what happened? And she goes, oh, you would not believe what happened. He got the first date and we went nude bungee jumping. And I have to admit, I was kind of like, that seems like it's out on the edge of what, you know, and she goes, oh, I was furious with him when he said, because you told me to say yes. And I'm sitting here thinking, okay. But it ends up, she said, look, I don't know if I can do this, but she said, I will do it, but I don't like it. I feel like you're forcing me to do something. You're making fun of this whole thing. And he was like, no, it's just, there's only one time a year where you can do this and it's free if you'll do it for nude and we can't afford it. And I feel really vulnerable. Like, they had this incredible conversation mm-hmm. that was so different and it was freeing for her. Like, but she said, you know, if you hadn't told me I had to say yes, we would have had the biggest fight we'd ever had about this very, you know, and she would have never known that he felt vulnerable. Like, there were so many things that came out of that one willingness to try something that different. So I've always thought of that
version of date night might be a little different than what people think.
How interesting. Yeah. Well, that's amazing. Let's change tacks for a little bit, because I feel like we've got a lot of very quick changes in dynamics right now with couples that are just kind of experiencing what's happening right now. And so you've got couples who are used to one person working from home and the other leaving every day, or both leaving the house each day. And now all of a sudden you've got people cooped up at home, still stressed about the things that they need to accomplish with work or their businesses or things like that. And so the stress level is much higher. Mm-hmm. And now we're all quarantined. So talk about conflict resolution under like these extreme sort of circumstances now.
Yeah. Well, one thing, and this is just more relationship dynamics to set this up. We join, we create a partnership because we like to be attached and belong somewhere. But there's also this burning need to have independence or autonomy. And those two are always at play. Now you put those two people plus two kids and maybe two dogs in one house. And what might start to happen is, because we're all quarantined, what might start to happen is the person might start to feel inundated, like, oh my gosh, I can't get away from you. And, you know, and again, it can seem like a problem over there. And it's really this sense of how can we manage this new world? And so, and we went through it. And what we started to do is I had to bring up my sense of inundation, like, oh my gosh, I cannot spend all my time doing everything together. This is just driving me nuts. And, or even bandwidth, we are both coaches. So we're both using the Zoom at the same time, which is stressful on the internet. So we had to have a conversation about what's working and what's not, and what do we need to do differently. And we decided to have that at the end of each day as we moved into this new world of being together. And it was a very helpful, because things that bothered me didn't bother Susan. And then she had other areas that she wanted to talk about. So it created a space of this acknowledging this is new, this is uncomfortable. So let's talk about it. And how are we going to deal with things? And it's changed really rapidly too. So that's why we were doing it at the end of each day to kind of digest the day.
And you know, if you have kids and a family there, even the version of that 5-5-5 can be very useful. Just giving people permission to talk about the day without anyone interrupting. I jokingly said it could be a 2-2-2-2. If you've got 5 minutes, everyone, and allow people in that to express their feelings. Like someone might be really scared, and this could be, or in the way people deal with this type of thing, some people use humor, some people
get angry,
some people get, and to try to have some compassion for each other before judging so harshly, and bring it inside the house, and you really begin to see how people cope with tension and stress, and not to make it right or wrong, but to try to be curious. Wow, you're really loud today. What is going on?
Or you're really touchy. Or like Susan was saying that today's been a hard day for me. And until I actually took some time and just let myself breathe, and actually what I did is cry, that kind of like moved my energy. Because there's such, I don't know, it's a really stressful time. There's everything's new and changing. So it's no wonder all of us would have our own coping mechanisms that come up, and giving space for that for each person.
Mm-hmm. Thinking too, you know, if family with kids and things like that, like we've actually encouraged doing a dance break. Like I think couples need to, we do it.
We did a dance break.
But it's really fun to do with kids and family we're all just going to move for 5 minutes. Anyone can pick their favorite tune, and you just decide and interrupt the day throughout the day with something like that versus just trying to steal your way through. We've got to be quiet for 4 hours because we're working from home. And it's like, that's insane.
Yeah,
it wouldn't even happen if you were at work. You know, you wouldn't have that. You'd right. get interrupted.
Going to the water cooler, you know? Having lunch or whatever it is. So,
yeah. Well, I think for us, the biggest thing that's coming up is I have 4 kids. So
wow.
teenagers down to 8 years old, you know, wow. I have a 16-year-old all the way down to 8 years old. And I'm used to having the house by myself during this.
Wow.
The kids are at school. I can do my work. Everything's great. And as you guys have probably experienced just now in this interview, I've had kids coming in and out.
Yes, we've seen that.
And I'm like, you know, in the code. And I'm like, isn't your dad home too? Like, why are you all coming to me for this? And so it starts to just, all those frustrations just kind of like amp mm-hmm. up, like whose job is this anyways? Like all yes. of a sudden there's all these new jobs. Like lunch is all over the kitchen. Like, do I clean that up? Does dad clean that up? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like all of a sudden there's all these new scenarios that never existed before. And it's like, how do we navigate all of that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the tricky part is finding ways to not just set a rule, but to actually, okay, here's an idea. Here's what I'd like. Here's what I'm going to suggest.
Here's what didn't work for me.
And what do we want to try tomorrow? Like, to be willing and able to experiment, and when things, the tensions rise, just sort of acknowledge that, but also go, well, here's what I didn't like about it. I don't know if that's what you intended, because it could be, you know, it's so easy if you're sitting there like, I loved what you said, where is he? Like, why am I the one answering? You know, and it would be easy then to go and just blast him. Like, you know, am I the only one working from home? Why? Versus, I don't know if this was intended, but this is how I, you know, what was going on? That's that kind of check it out. Check out your story piece that we think could be really important and becomes really critical during times like this.
To check out your story and check out the person's intention, and kind of before you kind of blast them, like, it's clear you didn't care about me being on a podcast. Right. He might not have known or didn't understand, oh, there's all these four kids that need to be more managed because of this.
Right.
Like those are just gaps in our learning to be in the same space with each other.
Yeah. Quickly. Like there's no adjustment period.
No.
All of a sudden, like whose stuff is more important right now? I don't know.
Yes. Mine is, of course.
Yeah. This is really important. I bring so much income from these free podcast interviews that we're always
Well, and you know, you do bring up something that I think is really critical is when things do seem like, why is, you know, I can make up some sort of story about what is driving her, you know, like she'll, you know, one, we're very different around money. And so what this all means in the world right now might be very different to her than it does to me, you know, and instead of me jumping all over, you know, you've got to be kidding. The last thing we need to be worried about right now is, you know, whether the stock market is going to ever stabilize, you know, like, and yet, if I don't argue about that, I could say, so wait a minute, why are you so upset about this? What is really going on? Why is it so important to you that I know that this is happening
around the stock market? You're worried about the stock market
and whatever it is, you know, or the kid, you know, and asking that question first, it could, you might think you know the answer, but usually something else starts to evolve and it gives the person space to be like, wow, okay. So it's a safety issue. This, your foundation has been rocked. Okay. I have compassion for that and I can't fix it. And, you know,
but that gets, when we ask the person, why is this so important to you? It gets to a deeper kind of core value conversation where we can connect versus you got to manage the kids so they don't walk into my podcast, which is more the problem at the top, but there's something deeper. Like this means something to me. I have a pride of creation in my podcast. So that's why I want this whatever he's working on. So it just brings you to a deeper level where we can connect as humans. Yeah. So asking that question, why is it so important?
Yeah, I think you nailed it really well. It's just to be curious, to ask questions before we just go on the tack. Like, like maybe why is this happening? Why did this go down this way? You know, and like what's going on with you versus here's what's going on with me. And this is really frustrating. So like, I think you're right. Just getting curious and asking those questions.
And Monica, I do think it's okay to say, I need 2 minutes and I want to tell you how frustrated I am. We talk about this in the book. We don't have a good capacity for dealing with anger, so it squirts out in different ways, but we're all touchy and angry right now from all the changes that we're doing. So we talk about this idea of a Vesuvius, which is giving yourself 2 minutes to kind of just vent, and recognizing a lot of people are scared of that because they have anger velcroed with violence, which was true in my household. So I had to separate those two and recognize anger is natural and healthy. And it's just this energy that's rising up because a boundary's been crossed. A boundary's been crossed because we're all stuck in our homes. Right. Or it could be even that the kids were coming in and out, or, you know, those are like, I'm not happy with that. And so I want some space to move that energy. That's okay too. And to negotiate those times. And the kids are great. The kids, the littlest kid could keep the time even because we think, oh, the kids can't see me angry. Well,
it's actually healthy for them to see you get angry in a way that's, you know, clear and safe and boundary. Then they can get angry if they're feeling that. So
we just ask, you know, you don't hurt yourself, property, or anybody else.
And if there are words that you don't want said, you have, so that's part of the boundarying process. What does this look like so that it can work, you know?
Yeah. You brought up a really interesting point in that I think it's actually so good for the kids to see conflict and resolution happening in real time with their parents. I think that's so healthy when we try to like hide the argument from the kids or shelter them from any discomfort. Type of misunderstanding. Yeah. I think you're putting them at a disadvantage and seeing that like conflict is okay. We handle it in a very safe way. And whether we resolve the conflict or we just, you know, move past it, that it's okay.
Well, I think because so often people think, oh my gosh, I'm going to die. It feels like I'm going to die if we have this. And I think that's learned young. So I think what you're saying is a really valid point. If we see this being modeled and recognize, hey, they disagreed and we still went on and we had dinner and we connected and I'm safe.
Well, and to know that it's actually okay if it gets messy. Yeah. That I may make a mess. I may yell it. I may say, you know, whatever. And if I then, I own my stuff to clean it up. I think that's what children need to see more of. Adults need to do more of, you know, holding it back. Because if you don't do the messy part, you'll do it somewhere else. Somebody else is going to hear about, I don't know how many times I know I talk to people and they've been complaining to their friends. Right now, they can't complain to their friends about their partner. So there's got to be some room to be able to, you know, like, even if you just say blah, 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 move the frequency of that frustration through and let the kids see, yep, you can boundary it, make it clean, you know. Mm-hmm. And if they don't feel safe, they could tell you and then, oh, what was it about that that made you feel uncomfortable? And get clear on it. Because, you know, then that, you know, each person could define what they need so that there is a way to be expressive and full in who you are.
Because I think one of the main things I didn't learn as a little kid is how to deal with my own emotional energy, whether it's anger or fear. I just pretended it didn't exist. And so I had no, that's what I've spent my adulthood, like getting comfortable with emotions. So if kids see and allow, have space for their own anger or upset, and it's like, I'm mad at you that you won't let me go out of the house. This isn't fair. And for sure it isn't. And this is what we have to do right now.
Yeah.
You know, those are all really good life skills that build resiliency in the system, yeah. Which I was very brittle in my emotional frame.
Yeah. I love that. I love that. So it's no secret that this is a very stressful time. Families are going through, you know, this is unprecedented. I don't think we've ever had anything quite like this happening. So what do you recommend couples do to kind of rekindle or keep the romance alive while stress levels are so heightened like this?
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing, what just popped in my head is you are trapped at home. You could actually be having some sex, which would do a lot to help settle the energy between. Yeah. Yeah. People. Just saying. And it does help reconnect. And one, it helps discharge the tension in your body. And it actually helps build oxytocin in your brain. It gives your brain like a flush of good hormones. And there's all sorts of chemistry that you can find out about it. But so that is a helpful thing to do to restabilize in some ways.
And that it's important because we also do think, you know, sometimes if you're doing it just as a way to make up for something stupid you did during the day, that's actually not what we mean. Then it's not actually very helpful. It'd be much better to have that tough conversation first and then, you know, but finding ways like how doing things that are sensual, like, and when I say senses, I mean, like, I'm not talking sensual, just sexual,
erotic.
But like, I'm talking about touch. I'm talking about smell, taste. And right now, if somebody in your house is sick or something, maybe you do have to keep a distance, but how can you listen to music? How can you do something that, because that sensory support actually helps tremendously in terms of feeling connection and bond between you, your spouse, your kids.
I mean, you can light a candle, you can put a diffuser on for essential oils, and don't minimize the impact because we are primal beings. Yeah. So our senses really matter. And you could give a foot rub with some nice smelling lotion. Those are all safe ways of hand massage. And even look like if you can take a walk together, some places you can't leave the house at all. But if you can take a walk together, it's, you know, and out in nature and looking at things, those are all ways that bring you down that stress curve and recreate the connection here. And when we can go out to the woods, we're in Montana, so we have woods, and it's kind of like, that's right, the world is not ending. There is a big world, you know, nature and animals are not affected by this whole pandemic piece that's happening. They're perfectly fine and unchanging. And that's normalizing in the brain to recognize that.
Yeah, it's beautiful that spring is still happening. I mean,
I know, and
see that the flowers are budding and spring is going to happen regardless of all of the other. So that is very beautiful. The other beautiful thing I think all of this that I've realized is this could be the first time in history that the whole world has come together. They're not fighting. Like, we're all doing the same exact thing. I think it's actually very beautiful.
It is. I wish we were talking about this even with businesses. It would be great because there is this sense of, will our businesses survive? But we were even thinking, gosh, if businesses collaborate, even with their competitors during this time, how can we come together to serve our clients or customers, even in this time?
And some businesses are, but it's like continuing to think collaboratively, not competitively. And it's always a challenge, and that we will have differences about what that looks like. You do see that the human, I think this problem is really going to be solved through the grassroots of us people, human beings, being willing to do something different. And that's going to be what makes it different.
And the connection and the collaboration, even with the social distancing, you know, it's tricky, but you're right. We're all facing the same stresses and to greater and lesser degrees. But it's weird that somebody in Spain is dealing with the same thing that somebody in Montana is, that somebody in China is.
There's no fighting. We're all doing We're all being affected the same way. It's really kind of interesting.
We're all staying in our homes.
Yeah. And thank goodness for modern technology. But
I know. Oh, yes. Could you imagine if we didn't have the internet? Like how much this is actually creates some sanity, allowing us to connect to other people, like doing this right now. It's terrific.
Yeah, it is wonderful. Okay, so I'm going to ask you my signature question. If you had the undivided attention of all the couples in the entire world for just a few minutes, what is the most important thing you could teach them about the beauty of conflict and how to navigate it?
Well, the thing that I always tell people is it's not what you do, it's what you do next. So show up and do something with your partner and then pay attention. Don't worry about whether you did it right or wrong. Notice. And that'll give you the space to do what you need to do next. And especially during this time, don't hold back. Don't be afraid. Show up fully and then be willing to see what you may need to do next based upon that.
And this is Chris Marie. I would say risk saying what you think might end the relationship in order to bring more aliveness and probably grow the relationship. And this is said from somebody who was a conflict avoider professionally, and that there's so much you can do if you actually find your voice and can do that with vulnerability, being willing to say, hey, this is me, and be curious and interested in the other and reflect back what you're hearing that other person say.
I love that. So great. Okay. So tell my listeners where they can find you, work with you if that's appropriate, and get copies for sure of your books.
You bet. Our website is Thrive Inc., but I'll spell it. It's www.thriveinc.com. And all our information is there. We do have a free gift that we can offer people. Should I do that?
Always.
Okay. Excellent. Okay. So how you can do this is you can text this number. It's 406-350-7691. And when you put that number in the top, you put your name and email, and then you type when you're going to get a response, and you type the word spark, S-P-A-R-K, you're going to get, I should have told you what you're going to get first. You're going to get the secret to setting boundaries that stick. Mm. So it's a free little workbook that tells you how to set boundaries. So that resentment that we were talking about, how to make sure that goes away so that you're taking care of your boundaries.
Cool. We'll make sure to link that number in the show.
Oh, good. Okay. We have a podcast, The Beauty of Conflict, and that's just another way to connect to us. So those are some things.
Awesome. I love it. Well, thank you guys so much for your time today, and I'll let you get back to quarantining.
You too. And take care of those kids. Yes. Good luck with that conversation with your husband.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Wasn't that interview just amazing? I really enjoyed talking to those women, and the timely and relevant material that we covered about conflict, because I'm sure as the weeks and months roll on and we are all stuck together in quarantine, that there is bound to be some conflict that will arise. So listen to this episode, take notes, return to it often, and remember that there is actually beauty in conflict, and it's okay to disagree. And it's so important to show up and have your opinions heard so that deadly resentment does not rear its ugly head in your relationship. Because I promise, as someone who has been there before and does not ever want to return to that place where I just tried to do it all and keep my mouth shut, that there is so much value in showing up as yourself, asking for the things that you need after you've been able to process through the emotions. And even as these two shared, to bring some emotion into it, it's okay. Just be sure that you are getting the things that you need to be able to continue on the path of personal growth and building your relationship. I loved this episode, and I hope it was helpful to you as well. You guys, I am so excited to finally announce the project I have been working on, which is the total rebranding and relaunching of this podcast. We're going from On the Brighter Side to On the Brighter Side of Marriage. This new podcast will be more focused on marriage, motherhood, and entrepreneurship, and balancing the three. I am so excited to tell you more about this fantastic launch, but for now, please mark November 16th on your calendars as a huge day. I'm going to have some incredible interviews. I think you're really going to love it. Some of our favorites from last season are coming back, and I think you're really gonna love the new content that we're working on. I also wanna make you aware of a virtual live workshop that I'll be doing this Thursday, October 15th at 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time, where I'll be talking about how you can create a marriage that supports your business and a business that supports your marriage. I'll be talking about my four pillars: courage, confidence, communication, and connection. And I promise, if you are a passionate entrepreneur juggling marriage, motherhood, and entrepreneurship, you do not want to miss this special event. You can register by going to www.onthebrightersideofmarriage.com/4pillars. That will also be linked in the show notes. So I hope to see many of you there. Even if you can't catch it live, if you're registered, I will send you the replay. So I will see you soon. And until next week, have courage, be kind, and stay on the brighter side.